and they were doing everything they could to keep her breathing. She wasn't breathing on her own, so there was a nurse that stood there for 45 minutes just breathing for her on the ambibag. She said, I want to make sure that your wife gets here.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Life, a podcast brought to you by LifePath. Donation can be a complicated subject, but it is really all about life. Spend a few minutes as we unravel the complexities of donation. Let's talk about life.
For Life Bank and the families we support, holidays serve as a poignant reminder that the celebrations are mixed with joy, but also with the absence of loved ones. We understand that everyone copes with loss in their own unique way. By discussing these differences, we gain a greater insight into how to support our families and individuals navigating the complexities of grief during the holidays. As Father's Day approaches, we hope to shed some light on ways that men approach the grieving process differently. Hi. You're listening to episode 151 of Let's Talk About Life. I'm your host, Colleen Gerber, kidney recipient and LifeBank staff member. I am joined by two very special people on this episode, and I'm so honored to be here with my colleague, Alyssa Berman, manager of bereavement services, and Ryan Dornan, a donor father who lost his almost two-year-old daughter, Kinsley. Ryan, thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Alyssa. As always, I enjoy our time together on the podcast. We are going to start with Ryan. And Ryan, I would love for you to share your story about your daughter, Kinsley, and what she was like as part of your family.
She was her own person, is the best way to describe it. We have Brooklyn, who is her sister, who just turned 9. Just completely different personalities. Brooklyn is afraid of everything, very introvert, doesn't like, you know, a lot of things. Kinsley, on the other hand, was just, I want to be in everything. She was definitely a daddy's girl, was obsessed with me. I'd get home from work probably about 4:30, 5 o'clock, and she'd come running to me. We'd sit on the couch together, just cuddle. She'd watch her iPad. I'd play on my phone or watch TV, but that was our time. We would just sit there. And then as she got older, you could see her personality start to develop, very her own person. She wasn't talking yet, saying very few words, but she would point and be very demonstrative in what she wanted. She would grunt, like if you could picture the Hulk doing Hulk hands, just, she would constantly do that if she didn't get away.
Well, almost two. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Which is funny because Brooklyn, when she was almost two, was, you know, she was just starting to calm down. She had a milk soy protein allergy that took us a while to discover. So her as a baby, it was just constantly trying to comfort her. Kinsley, on the other hand, was just, all right, I'm good. Just lay me down here. Very laid back, just like I am. Completely laid back, not a care in the world.
If you're comfortable, can you share with our listeners what happened on the day Kinsley died and how you became connected with LifeBank?
Unfortunately, I was at work. I was supposed to be in Pennsylvania with my family for the weekend. Ashley and the girls went to visit her mom. She lives in Washington, PA. And, you know, just a girl's weekend. I was supposed to have Sundays off. It didn't happen. It's just, it's the way fate works, apparently. It's a terrible thing. I got a phone call, didn't answer my phone. I was busy. Rang 5 or 6 times. And then, you know, the restaurant phone rings. And a random lady, just a good Samaritan. And for the life of me, I cannot remember her name. And my wife is going to kill me for that. There's so many names from that time that I just don't remember. She said there was an accident. And the first thing I thought in my mind was, what's going on? Why is my wife not calling me? But I heard her in the background crying, so I was okay. First thought in my mind was, are the girls okay? She said, as far as I know, yes, they're okay. That's when I kind of knew something had happened. So what had happened was a gentleman was not paying attention. They were stopped at a toll plaza. And he rear-ended them at 60 miles an hour. It was a straightaway, no rain.
Oh my God. There were
signs that there was construction. He just wasn't paying attention. And he hit them pretty hard. And Ashley's seat back had failed. basically her seat broke, fell back into Kinsley, and her headrest made impact with Kinsley's head and herniated her brainstem.
Oh my gosh.
And with it being so backed up with traffic, being a toll plaza, it took 30 to 40 minutes just for an ambulance to get to them. They had life late, but, you know, they're trying to move cars out of the way so they can get there. And I remember the EMT calling me from the life flight and said, hey, we're getting Kinsley life flighted. Where do you want us to take her? Just said the closest possible, just Akron Children's. Actually, in Brooklyn, we're being taken to St. Elizabeth's in Youngstown. And I said, okay, I'm going to head to Akron. I'll meet you guys there. Is she okay? Yes, she's breathing. But there was a pause. You know, as a parent, the first thing that goes through your mind when you ask a question, you get a pause. It's, okay, are you telling me the truth? Are you just trying to make me feel better? What's the process here? And I remember, so people listening, don't do this. I was going 85, 90, trying to get to the hospital as quick as I could because I wanted to be there. Brooklyn and Ashley weren't going to be there. So it was just going to be Kinsley by herself. I didn't want her to be alone. I remember calling dad, mom, everybody I could. It just so happened my dad was on a plane to Ohio, and he had just landed. My mom was getting her nails done, and she just said, I'll just start driving in a direction. You tell me which way to go. So I had her go to St. E's to be with Ashley in Brooklyn, just so someone was with them as well. And I get to Akron Children's. I go in, check in. Life Flight hasn't landed yet. Confused. How did a car driving from Moreland Hills to Akron beat a Life Flight? She goes, oh, I'm going to find out where it is. You know, they're on their way right now, just if you want to wait. I sit down. She goes, I hear the copter coming in now. Once we get everything situated, we'll take you back. About another 10, 15 minutes goes by. Chaplain comes out to see me. Again.
Oh, my goodness.
You just have that feeling right away.
That gut instinct.
That something's not right. I just felt this, like, just not. Takes me back, talks to me. Hey, I'm the chaplain. I just want to be with you. I know there was a pretty severe accident. And I said, is she okay? He goes, honestly, I do not know. But when a severe accident like this happens, they always send me to come talk to the parents and just make sure that everything's okay with you. Your mental state. I was in the back, maybe 5 minutes. Doctor came in, and all he said was, there's nothing we can do. Just right away. There was too much swelling. They couldn't get the swelling down in her brain. There was nothing to be done. And it was just me by myself. My wife didn't have her cell phone. She lost in the accident. You know, I'm trying to get a hold of her. What still happened was the nurse at St. Elizabeth gave actually her personal cell phone to call me. She said, we've been trying to contact you. And I remember calling her and I said, she's not going to make it. And I broke down instantly, just to the ground.
Yeah.
Bawling everywhere. I couldn't see. And I remember the nurse comforting me and the doctor comforting me and trying just to get me to go to Kinsley, like doing everything we can to keep her alive so you guys can be with her. So my mom grabbed Ashley in Brooklyn. Ashley didn't get seen by a doctor. She's not concussion. She had a bruise. We're just going to let you go. Brooklyn had a fat lip from this whole ordeal. She was walking around outside the car with the Samaritan's daughter.
So their injuries were minimal.
Very minimal. And Ashley got there, and I was up in the room. Several nurses doing everything they could to keep her breathing and just alive. She wasn't breathing on her own. So there was a nurse that stood there for 45 minutes just breathing for her on the ambibag. Didn't have her hooked up to a vent, was just doing it on her own. She said, I want to make sure that your wife gets here, and I want to make sure that I'm helping her breathe. So it was amazing. The bereavement coordinator through Akron Children's has been phenomenal. She was there every step of the way. Do you guys need anything? Is there anything I can do to help? Family came in. Obviously, I couldn't keep it together. I cried so much that day. Like, everything hurt, and I felt like I was dehydrated. It's a wave of emotions that you don't expect, and it just hits you, and it just kind of takes control.
My God.
But I will remember every step of that day for the rest of my life. I do. I remember what I was doing when the accident happened. I remember how I was driving. I remember the phone calls word for word, the angry message I left my dad because he wasn't answering his phone, but he was on a plane and I apologized to him. I remember every step of that and trying to replay it over and over for that first month of what could I have done differently? But there was nothing.
No, there's nothing. And that a feeling that you can't explain either, you know, the helplessness.
That's exactly what it was. I remember the drive there just being like, please be okay. Please be okay. But knowing in my gut, you know, talking to the EMT, talking to the Good Samaritan, just something was wrong.
Yeah, yeah. How and when did LifeBank get involved?
LifeBank had reached out to us, I believe, the next day. I had a gentleman reach out to me, and again, names just fail me right now. And I really wish I would remember his name because he was amazing. He called me. I'm from LifeBank. We do organ donation, tissue donation. We just wanted to know if that's something you'd be interested in. I understand you just lost your daughter. There is a timetable, but we don't want to pressure you into anything. And then, you know what the real selling point was? Was that he started talking to me, just like a person. Not like a salesman, like, hey, you know, this is what it'll do for other people. It was just, tell me about your daughter. You know, I have a daughter myself, so I can only imagine. He said, I don't know what you're going through. I can just imagine the struggle and the pain. I remember telling him, you know, I'll give you a call back. I'm not ready right now. And I went and I talked to my wife and I, you know, told her about the phone call and just how he was just very personable and just very, hey, I'm sorry for your loss. Is there anything I can do? Told me about his family. It was just very connecting. We had had family. My brother-in-law, Ashley's brother, received a donation. He had a heart problem, and that's how I met him. My first time meeting him was in a hospital gown, so that was a nice awkward moment. I tried to hug him. He didn't really want to do it. That's how I met him. I had a friend I worked with. His name was Tyler. His daughter, Bella, had several heart procedures. You know, she had received tissue donation when she was young. And we thought, you know, that's the right thing to do. Because her heart was so strong. She, you know, the accident happened at noon. She finally took her last breath at like 8:37 at night. Her heart was just so strong. And so we knew that had to be something that someone else can, you know, use. Mm-hmm. The decision was extremely easy. It was, you know, difficult at first, but, you know, the conversation with the representative, you know, having people that we knew that needed donation, it was simple. Yes.
Yeah. And we really do care about our families and what you're experiencing. And there is that level of connection. So we're proud of that. And we're glad that you felt that. We mentioned earlier that Father's Day is approaching, and I can't even imagine how different it is for you. But how will you look at this day and celebrate, if that's the right word, Father's Day this year?
I get through. That is the best way to describe it. We go to a grief group that's once a month. It's a child loss support group. It's called See You in Heaven. They've been amazing, but they do things around the holiday. They did a Mother's Day brunch for the mothers. Father's Day, we're doing a picnic this coming Saturday. So it's something to get together and kind of remember your child and do stuff. But for Father's Day itself, if I'm not working, I probably just stay to myself. I have Brooklyn, which is amazing. If I didn't have her, I don't know how things would be. But still having Brooklyn is a blessing.
Yeah.
So I kind of just chill. We don't do anything extravagant. Same thing for Mother's Day. I asked my wife what she wanted to do. She said, I wanted to lay in bed. So you get to lay in bed all day. That's exactly what you get to do.
I think that's every mother's dream.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
Yeah, it is. For sure.
But Father's Day, yeah, I'll sit around the house, maybe do something with Brooklyn. I'll let her choose. What she wants to do, if there's something that she wants to do, if she wants to play with her friends, she can play with her friends. If she wants to go to the park or the pool or the beach, that's what we'll do.
Yeah.
I let her kind of decide the day and we'll spend it together. But it's not really a celebration of any point. It's just it's a trigger almost, like a day of grief that you think about over and over.
Yeah, that Kinsley is missing. Well, we're so blessed that you have Brooklyn. And father is a big word. Whether Kinsley is here with you, you're still dad. God bless you. Wow. Thank you for sharing your story, Ryan. I'm going to ask our expert about grief and bereavement. This has got to be hard, Alyssa. Can you talk a bit about how men grieve and how we can support them after their loss and so that their life goes on with meaning?
Thinking about this topic, I know I also run the risk of promoting stereotypes. So I want to also just acknowledge that there are differences between how men and women grieve and how people grieve in general. And I know that what I'm going to talk about today isn't going to apply to every man. I know it's not going to apply to every woman, but I do want to make sure that I at least acknowledge that. It's not my intention. I think one of the challenges is that in Western culture, women on the whole tend to form close relationships with other women during challenging times. And so those relationships then serve as a source of support for women. And in my professional experience, men have often said to me that they struggle with their spouse's need to talk about loss a great deal, and that when they do, they notice they're more upset and then they can't help them. And on the flip side, women have shared with me that they think, I hear this all of the time, that men just aren't grieving right, because women often see talking and emoting as a way to get through grief, and women worry that when men are going inward, that they're not grieving. Now, clearly, we have Ryan sitting here today talking about his emotional experience, so I do really honor that there are exceptions to that. But I have noticed that women tend to be more, on the whole, kind of open about how grief impacts them functionally. So they realize, no, they can't go to work. Nope, they don't seem to be able to balance their checkbook. And no matter how far we've come in society, men are often painfully aware that this is a situation you can't fix. And they learn very quickly that there's no money, no career, no tool that can take care of this. And I think what's equally heartbreaking for men is they can't fix the heartbreak of their partners. Whether we like it or not, men are conditioned that somehow they should be able to make this better. And often they will report that their loved one retreats from them, not because they don't love them, but because they don't know what else to do. And for men who feel traditionally protective, there's just an overall helplessness in that situation. And so I think what's incredibly challenging is that there can end up being a great deal of loneliness for men in grief. I often joke that men tend to engage in parallel activities with their friends. They stand next to each other and bowl, they fish, they play pool, they golf, they cook. They stand next to each other. And when women get together, we face each other. And it's very true. And now, that doesn't mean that men aren't engaging in that parallel experience, but it's very different. And so women will literally turn towards their friends, where men will stand next to them. And sometimes in that next to experience, there can be a level of loneliness. But I think what's most important for women and men to understand is that if you do not express grief in some traditional way through emotion, it has nothing to do with your depth of grief. And I have to tell you that the amount of women who show up in counseling and are concerned because they're not criers is extraordinary. There must be something wrong with me. And I'm so grateful to always reassure people that crying is only one way to express grief. And so in an effort to be inclusive, research has talked about how there are instrumental grievers. Those are people who grieve by doing things. Give them a good task and a list and they're good to go. And then there are intuitive grievers, and those are folks who tend to grieve by talking and processing. And of course, there are a combination of the two. I don't want to make an assumption about Ryan, but my guess is you lie somewhere in between. Your capacity to talk about it and also to do and provide in your family has continued. The other thing that's so important, and it's, I think this month actually, is also, in addition to the many things it is, has to do with men's mental health this month, is that despite the increased availability and support for men through grief and through mental health, that the CDC reports that 1 in 10 men experience anxiety and depression, but less than half of them actually reach out for help. And that in 2020, men died by suicide 4 times as much as women. Often more likely to cope with their intense feelings of loss through drinking and through substance use. And it's not that they're more likely to do it because something is wrong. It's because we have a cultural expectation that discourages outward grieving among men. Men and boys are given the message from a young age, those awful sayings, you know, suck it up, walk it off, boys don't cry, hold your chin up, you know, grit your teeth, all of that stuff. And so then there's no sanctioned way for men to grieve, which is problematic since grief isn't a choice.
Right, right.
So you're going to have pain, you're going to have loss, you're going to have disappointment. And what are you supposed to do with it? So because there are so few resources for men, for them to address their emotions, my experience in working with grieving men, which has always been a tremendous honor, is that the experience of loss and your grief becomes a tremendous act of courage. And so what I do is when I work with men, I encourage them to really stretch their capacity to feel the full weight of their emotion. And sometimes that just means breathing, just being still and breathing. Also, we as women and as men need to stop shaming men. There are rules of oppressive masculinity that lead to shame for men who really want to step out of the box and express their grief openly. Men need to support each other, and men need to at least give each other silent respect. I also encourage men to seek community with other men. The fact is most kind of wounds of masculinity were in large caused by men, and yet healing is accelerated by being in the company of other men who have gone through something like this. So if you're a partner of a man, for example, and he is a doer, and maybe it's helpful to talk with him while he's doing an activity or a project, just simply reminding him that you're there. If he doesn't want to talk, that there's no judgment, he's not doing anything wrong, he's just doing it his way. So I encourage people to ask open-ended questions. What's it been like for you lately? To ask, what's been helping you? What's been making it harder for you? Is there anything that I can do to make it better? And that men often find, as I said in that example of parallel activity, doing things and talking. So engaging in activity with your partner and being honest about what it's like for you. I worked with a wonderful family, and she used to say, I grieved in the family room and he grieved in the basement. They're still married. They've been married for 50 years. And to remember, too, that we grieve as we live. So when you have a man in your life who you love, just become concerned if you notice that he's acting out of character. But if your partner or the man that you love in your life isn't crying and was never a crier before, he's not going to wake up one day and become one. And then finally, there are now wonderful resources for men in grief. There's a wonderful website called mensgriefnetwork.org. There's a podcast called Memories of Us, Grief Support for Men. There's a website called Guys in Grief. There's another one called Uncomfortably Numb. And there's a phenomenal podcast done by a man that I encourage you to listen to if you're interested, and that's All That There Is with Anderson Cooper. So there are wonderful resources now out there for men to access. And I think the most important thing we can do as partners to men is to be patient and understanding, recognizing that they are experiencing grief, but just in a different way than we are.
That's amazing. Thank you for all those resources. And I'm sure our listeners will utilize those and pass them along to the people they love and who are grieving. You know, I said Alyssa is the expert in all things, and that is so true. But I am most appreciative of Alyssa is the programs she has put together for our families that really reach out and help them on their grief journey. What are some of the things that you utilized at Life Bank of our services that we offer?
So we haven't gotten to use any of the seminars yet. They just don't line up. But there is one coming up. I believe it's another week or so. They're writing the letter to recipients. Unfortunately, tissue donors are a little different. But we were still looking forward to come checking that out and seeing the process of, because hopefully one day we're able to, you know, not so much connect, but just write a letter explaining Kinsley and how she was. And we're thankful. The information that we know is that two people did receive tissue from Kinsley. It was a gentleman in New York and a young girl in Pennsylvania. That's the information that we have. And we were ecstatic to hear about that, that it actually went to somebody. And it just did. You know, that was something that we were extremely proud of, that we made that decision. I use therapy through Dina Balk. I see her every other Monday, and it's always a pleasure to come in. And it goes back to, you know, men grieving. Not all of us men enjoy talking about our issues. I certainly don't, but this has changed me. And it feels extremely good to talk about it and get it out. And that's basically a way that I grieve, is talking about it. But I do know, nothing against the women in our support group, but if it wasn't for Bob and Dan, I'm going to name them, two gentlemen that come in, I probably wouldn't be as open as I am. But seeing other fathers there that have gone through this, you know, grief of losing a child, it's been amazing just to connect with other men that actually know the feelings that I'm having and the struggles that I have.
Wow. Well, again, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story with our listeners. It's a poignant story, and we just appreciate your time. Thank you. Alyssa, thank you, as always, for coming in and guiding us in these important topics. Happy Father's Day to all those that are listening, and to those who have lost, use it as a day to remind yourself that you're still a dad and you are loved.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk About Life. If you have questions about today's podcast, reach out to us at info@lifebank.org. Take a few minutes to do something heroic and register to be an organ donor by saying yes at lifebank.org. Literally, someone's life is depending on